evening, or good morning, or good day to you, and welcome to Sons of the Double Cheeseburger. I'm Brandon. I'm here with Kevin. Hello, Kevin.
Hello, Brandon. How are you today?
I'm all right. I got a full 8 hours of sleep last night, which was pretty cool.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, it was. It was. I accomplished that by taking the radical step of realizing I felt tired and just going to bed.
I've heard good things about that.
That's a method. I haven't tried that in a long time, and I have no idea why. It's as though I'm reliving my toddler years. Yeah. No, I have to stay up longer. No, I don't. And I didn't. How are you doing?
I also got some sleep last night. I had not slept in the dark hours for a couple of nights, and so, but last night I did, which was nice.
That is
so
nice.
We're big boys.
Hmm.
Mama should be proud.
She sure should be. But then she'll listen to this episode and that'll probably mess all that up. But no, it won't.
I don't know. Do you think our mothers actually listen?
I don't. I think she doesn't. I think she's very busy. She's one of those people that has kept on working straight through. And when she's not working, she's being married to our father. So, I bet there's no time to listen.
Who do you think is listening from our family?
Who do I think is listening from our family? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't either.
I'm not sure any of them are.
It's not a good question. Let's not put anybody on the spot.
All right. If you are from our family and you're listening right now, I want you to call in 555. No, actually, call 630-709-1823. Good. Call that number right now and tell me that you're listening. All right. That's a real phone number.
Is that your phone number? I wasn't really paying attention to the number you gave because I thought it was going to be a fake number.
It is my real phone number. So therefore, yes, if somebody listened, and probably no one did, then they can have it. But I'm not saying it again. All right. So other than getting some sleep, how are things? Well, we are really running out of things to do around here. I got to tell you.
Yeah, we've hit that point as well.
Yeah. We've built all the Legos and Kinexes and everything that not only that we have and that we can afford, but that we can find a place to put. So I'm ready to, I need to build a trebuchet so I can start firing them off to some other part of Santa Cruz. So some other household can build them.
You're going to do that by trebuchet, huh?
Yeah, that's my plan.
Okay.
Because I've always thought trebuchet is the coolest way to send things.
So if Jeff Bezos is listening.
Yeah.
Start getting
I genuinely think what he should be doing is they should have drones that fly the packages to regional trebuchets, and then the trebuchets launch the packages. They got to be obviously on a big, like, rotating platform, so you line up exactly. You got to find that you get. There's got to be so much geometry that goes into this. It would be so great. So you got to rotate it to the right spot. You got to think about how far the house is from there. Which tells you how far to bring back the lever. And then, I think it'd be great.
I'm not going to bother disagreeing with you.
If Amazon starts catapulting packages into the side of my house, I'm there for it. I'll take that. On the other hand, I don't want my food delivered that way.
No. No, I hear you. That's not a good idea.
We're out of things to build and projects like that to do. I was genuinely thinking about it today. I thought I'm of two minds. One of them is to try taking apart some of these things that we've built and then represent them and see if Zach is interested in building them again. And if he's not, then I've thought about going on like What is that app? Is it Nextdoor? Is that the neighborhood app? I think it is.
I think it might be.
So, like going on Nextdoor or something and trying to sell these kits for, you know, a fraction of their new price because they're all fully intact with the directions and everything, but we've already made them. Maybe some other family needs something inexpensive to do.
Well, I think that'd be very nice.
So, other than that, it's walking and playing video games. Started playing a video game called Donut County. Have you ever heard of Donut County?
I have not.
Donut County. The premise of Donut County, as far as I can tell so far, because I'm not real far into it, is that you you play a hole in the ground, and then your goal is the hole in the ground is to move around and swallow up objects on the ground. And every time you swallow up an object, you get a little bit bigger. So then eventually you start out like only big enough to swallow up like little patches of grass. And then you get bigger and bigger and bigger. And then like in the first round that I played, I started patches of grass. And then by the time I finished the round, you finish the round by swallowing up a goose riding on a moped. So it's that kind of game. And it was exactly where my brain was.
Is it also mushrooms that are legal where you're at, not just marijuana? I'm just trying to figure this out.
I don't know. I haven't had any mushrooms. No, it's really out there. This is a real honest-to-goodness game, Donut County. And I'm going to blow your mind by telling you that the way it was recommended to me was on an NPR podcast. So okay. There you go.
There's an alternate reality that I'm not a part of. All right. So we talked about this once. So you sent me some coffee.
I did. From my friends at Cat and Cloud Coffee here in Santa Cruz.
Yes. So it's a steeped coffee bag. It's The Answer is the name of the blend?
Yes. Yeah, this is kind of like their baseline blend. Sort of their house brew if you walk in any day. And this is, they work with a company that's called Steeped Coffee that has a process for taking coffee, fresh coffee, grind it, put it in bags, seal it up, package it, so that you can steep it in water like you would a tea bag, and then get a cup of coffee that would be similar to if you made a pot of coffee or poured over a cup of coffee yourself.
So I've opened the sachet and removed the coffee bag. I've placed in the cup as instructed. Now I need to pour hot water over it.
That starts the steeping process, by the way. Pouring hot water over it. You might have imagined. For those of you who don't know this, Kevin's never had coffee before. Did you mention that on previous? Yeah. I don't remember if we mentioned that previously or not. Kevin's never had coffee before. So I decided to send him some, and he decided to try it.
So now I am dunking the bag for 15 seconds or longer for added strength.
Yes.
So this will make me more powerful?
It will. It will.
Well, I can see why people drink coffee then.
There's three settings. There's strength, there's speed.
Speed, explosiveness.
Explosiveness. And if that made sense to any of you, that's because you remember Horace Grant and the strength shoes. Which reminds us of the Last Dance.
Yes. So now I leave the steeped bag in coffee or until preferred taste. Drink after 5+ minutes.
Yes.
All right, I'm going to set the bag aside. I'm going to remove my Timolina coffee maker that I was holding my Timolino. Excuse me. Holding my hot water. I'm going to let it sit. So, yes, we should make some mention of The Last Dance because everyone in the world has. And we would hate to be left out.
Is it just me, or does it feel like with everyone in shelter in place, like we're having more of these kind of shared experiences than we'd been having for a while?
I mean, there is probably some increase of that, although there's been, I think, I don't know if it's more common or not, but we went through all these phases where everyone was watching The Sopranos and talking about it.
Yeah.
Everyone was watching Game of Thrones and talking about it, or, you know, it often seems to center around TV shows, actually. I've not seen any of those shows that people talk about, but I feel like there is that element. And I'll be honest, I don't recall if that looked different before, you know, cable TV or you know, kind of this increased prevalence of media. Like when we were kids.
See, I think we're actually...
I had to feel like there was something, right? There was something that people still kind of...
I think we're kind of getting a resurgence of it, actually. So this is... And this is why I wonder, as I'm thinking about this. When we were kids, and we talked about this a little bit before, that, I mean, when we were really young, we didn't have, like, VCRs. VCRs were relatively exotic even when we were in high school.
Right, they're made up of like exotic woods, like tea.
That's exactly what I mean by that, yeah.
Special material.
Made up of exotic woods and heavy metals. There was a lot of mercury in there, so you had to be careful not to crack it open. Yeah. They were uncommon, or they weren't ubiquitous yet.
Do you know actually that the Betamax went out of favor because they ran out of Betonium?
Oh man, that's awful.
Beta tapes.
The Betonium. Yeah, Sony should have seen that coming. So it used to be that, and plus that was the time when everything was on a set cycle, right? The TV shows, things like that. Your shows were always like must-see TV on Thursdays, right? On NBC. That was a thing that started back then because most people watched things when they aired. Not recorded them and watched them later. You watched it when it aired.
And so, you didn't have a choice.
Right. And even then, once you had the choice to like record things, I think for a pretty long while, there was still a pretty long tail where most of the time you still watched something when it aired. And people tended to then talk about it afterwards. I can remember that, you know, shows that would come out and, or that were out. I feel like Seinfeld, you know, was a show that I watched that, after every episode, people would be talking about what had happened on the episode the next day. And then you started to get...
VCR had already been around for some time by the time Seinfeld...
Well, that's true. But I can't remember a lot farther back than that because I'm very old. I'm thinking shows from my childhood, like Perry Mason. That would be an example.
Managed
show. Kojak.
Emergency...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you were a big Emergency fan, weren't you?
Wait, the Greatest American Hero?
Greatest American, absolutely, yeah.
You were a big fan of that.
Was I?
You were.
I might have been. I forgot all about that. Chips, I think everyone was a fan of Chips.
Well, yeah. And then the when it was in syndication.
Chips Patrol.
Right. This is something that is different. I was trying to explain this to my kids one time recently.
Syndication.
That it used to be when shows went into syndication, they had to slightly change the name of the show.
Yeah.
I'm not sure why.
I don't actually remember any other shows that did that, though.
Really? So maybe that.
Do you remember any others that had to change it? Because I can't.
I'm thinking about that now because, like, Brady Bunch was not changed.
No.
Unless it was originally something different when it. Partridge Family, The Monkees.
Yeah, Brady Bunch was originally called The Partridge Family.
That's good. what are we going to do with you?
So, but yeah, for whatever reason, Chips changed their name to Chips Patrol. It's pretty awesome. By the way, I think that your coffee's been sitting for about 5 minutes now.
It has been.
So yeah,
there's all sorts of noises happening over here.
Yeah.
We're having a thunderstorm.
Oh, wow.
And then something, how shook enough that something fell.
So. Oh, dear. You need to go check that out.
It didn't sound fragile, so.
Oh, good. I thought of a bunch of stupid jokes to make there, and I didn't make any of them. So
when I drink my coffee, do I have to kind of do that where I hold it with the two hands and scrunch up my shoulders? I'm like,
Yep. Yeah, you do. That's exactly how you have to drink it. The way you have to drink it is you have to put it up your mouth and then let some of it into your mouth.
That tastes okay. Ringing endorsement.
That was huge. That was, well, I got to say, that's better than most people's first taste of coffee. Most people are usually like, oh, God, you know.
No, I mean, it tastes a little burnt. It's a little, but I mean, that's what you're doing, right? You're roasting the beans and then you're running water over them.
And you're, Yeah, it's, okay. And I, you know, when people drink, yeah, go ahead.
What I should say is, it tastes different compared to, now I've, when I say I've not ever had coffee, I probably tried coffee, you know, shortly after high school or something, like at a Denny's, and it was swill, you know. So compared to what I recall that taste being, this does have more going on.
Yeah.
I'm not saying immediately I tried this and I was like, oh. And I like just like slurp the whole cup down. But I think there is an acquired element to it because it's different than water or
it is.
Sweet drinks, juices, whatever.
Yes. Well, and to me it's an interesting thing because like I always drink my coffee just black. I don't like anything in my coffee. I don't want any sugar, any sweetener. I don't want any cream.
Is that part of your aversion to foods that are white?
Probably. To be honest with you, it probably is, but I don't know for sure. But I just, like, I never tried it that way, and since I don't like milk, like the taste of milk, my thought is, well, adding the taste of milk to coffee isn't going to be better, right?
Right.
It's like... I'm not going to make a gross example, but taking something you like and then something you don't like, adding the don't like to it, it's very hard to imagine that's going to get better.
You really take a positive and a negative and have that equal a positive.
Right.
Mathematically, that's just not how it works, right?
Well, mathematically, it really depends on whether the positive number is larger than the negative number.
Oh, God.
Sorry.
Are you, though?
The number of things that we can assume in this day and age have gotten smaller and smaller.
So have my... Do you recall which of our parents took cream in their coffee?
Dad does.
Dad does, okay.
Dad takes cream in his coffee. Mom drinks her coffee black.
Sure. Because she needs as much go-go juice as she gets.
That, and I think she, you know... Again, she started drinking coffee when it really was basically like, I don't know, like hickory nuts ground up and water forced through them. I honestly, when I have tried like old, like first generation type coffee, I'm like, I don't know how you drink that. But
wait, by first generation coffee, do you mean like going back to...
I almost called it first wave coffee, and then I realized
that was... Are you talking about, like, Hill's Brothers and Folgers?
Yes, that's correct. That's correct.
Choco Nuts or whatever, you know, ones like that?
Yep. Mm-hmm. So in the coffee world, and I'm pretty sure that I'll get this right. I hope I don't goof it up. In the coffee world, all of that, like store, like the kind of coffee that people would typically brew at home, or what you would get in just like in a restaurant prior to like 2000, is what they call first wave coffee. So that's just the original experience of coffee in American culture. And then when coffee houses, most prominently known, of course, by most people by Starbucks, but other coffee houses as well, started brewing coffees and then mixing them with other things and having some different roasts and things like that, that was identified as the second wave of coffee. And there's a coffee, there's a roaster actually in San Francisco named Trish Rothgeb, who coined the term third wave of coffee. And that was where she talked about in the last, this is especially like in the last 10 to 15 years, that coffee roasters have really started to try to roast to different depths, so that to recognize that there are different properties that and flavors that come out of the coffee depending on roasting it more or roasting it less, and that particular beans all have their own distinctive kind of profiles. And so, you know, some bean you may have one set of beans that really does better with a darker roast, one that does better with a lighter roast, and that the idea of learning to tease out all of those different flavors and all those different kind of profiles, that's what they call the third wave of coffee. I told you I was going to get really dorky about it, but there it is.
That sounds horribly pretentious, if I could say, because coffee has a long tradition preceding European cultures or European antecedent cultures. And I think it would be unfair or unwise to assume that these other cultures that were also able to tease out different flavors and understand the complexities that come with different ingredients and such, had not also been able to do that same thing with coffee.
Oh, right. No, in fact, so let me add on it this way. I think that when people talk about first wave of coffee, they're not counting things that are prior to sort of the American mass-produced cup of coffee. They're saying the American mass-produced cup of coffee is first wave. And so I think that your point I think that's accurate. I think that, but although here's the other thing. This is the think about it this way. People living in other regions who maybe have been roasting, you know, growing coffee and harvesting it, roasting it, and drinking it for maybe for several hundred years, in all likelihood, they mostly had access to a pretty similar crop of coffee. Does that make sense? So
Okay.
some of what and again, this is one of those things, like I will tell you, like if I gave you, if we sat down together and I gave you took some stuff from Cat and Cloud, for example, and I put in front of you a cup that was from beans from Ethiopia and a cup with beans from Honduras or Costa Rica and a cup with beans from Mexico, you would be able to tell, you'd really be able to notice genuine differences between those three. Like in this, it like to, I think dramatic enough to compare to like if I gave you a Pepsi and a Coke and an RC, right? Where you could take each of those and go, each of those, yeah, it's basically the same thing, but there are different things going on. And some of that goes to the specific trees, right? And the specific fruit that's being produced. Some of it goes to growing conditions and soil. There are certain places where the soil seems to play a big part in enhancing or changing the flavor of things. So I suspect that if somebody from Honduras had the opportunity a long time ago to get coffee from somebody in Kenya, you know, that they would have recognized and said, oh yeah, these really taste pretty different. I mean, they taste both the same and different from each other. But I think that what I'm saying is, like, the that first wave of coffee, as coffee producers today talk about it, is that whole, like, mass-produced American generation, which actually there's not only is it that they just sort of tried to homogenize and tamp down any differences in flavors, they also tended to roast it darker. I don't entirely know why that is. I think it has something to do with consistencies and flavors. And they were using there are a couple of different varieties of beans or plants that grow. And you may have heard the term, like, Arabica coffee. So almost any coffee that you get today is, like, especially for any kind of coffee shop or a roaster or anything like that, is an Arabica variety. And the other variety is called Robusta. And Robusta is a less flavorful bean that grows faster and is more hardy and is easier to grow. And so so for a long time, all that first wave coffee, the mass-produced American coffee, was all Robusta beans because you could grow them fast and cheap and get a better harvest.
Okay.
So there is stuff like that that's changed, but I would agree with you. I don't think that, like, the people that are doing that right now are, like, discovering something that nobody had ever discovered. I do think that they have technology that allows them to try things that would have been harder to try. You know what I mean? Like if you roast, like if you were roasting, now they can take the beans and they can put them in the roaster, and they can roast them for, I don't actually know how long they roast a set of beans, but let's say they roast for 10 minutes, and then they know that if they push it to 12 minutes, it's gonna get, you know, the flavor is gonna change in this way. They probably do more experimentation and stuff like that, and playing around with it, with, like, data than older generations and indigenous generations did. You know what I mean? I'm sure they did some of that, but it's, again, it just comes down to that, you know, we do a lot of things with data now that previous generations didn't necessarily, and previous cultures didn't necessarily do. They harvested data, but not exactly in the way that we do it. So,
well, it's also a little bit of a privilege of wealth.
Oh, absolutely.
Such that we can, you know, go to the lengths to experiment.
Very much
because
so.
Experimentation is often just...
It's like a leisure, you know, activity, right?
Yeah, and it's waste.
Yeah.
It's really just a assumed waste.
Yep.
Of, you know, a natural resource or product. Yeah.
Yeah, so and then, like, the coffee that you have there, the answer, so what they do then is they make a blend, and so... they're actually using a couple of the different groups of beans that they have, and then they
Central America and Africa, it says, but it doesn't obviously say where.
Right. And they work, because they actually work with several different growers throughout South America and a couple in Africa as well. And so they, you know, they will, there'll be different beans in there from time to time, from different harvests and things like that. And so... but they work to try to make a pretty sort of general, I think they would call it, like, a clean cup of coffee. So it's not real dramatic one way or the other in terms of any of the particulars of a given bean. Man, that went on for a long time.
That's right.
How's it tasting now?
It's tasting all right. Yeah. One thing I am reminded of is that I am not a particular fan of hot beverages.
There you go. Well, and that's the challenge. If you don't like a hot beverage, then, yeah.
From a utilitarian standpoint, I'll drink hot beverages at times in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it has... to this point, seemed like drinking coffee in the summer is, you know, it's almost like an intentional slap in the face of the weather.
Yes.
Oh, you think it's hot already? I'm going to put some heat inside me.
That's right. I'm going to drink it down.
So, what wave are we on of the, like, international delights sort of coffee, flavored coffee creamers?
I don't, you know, I gotta check with Trish Rothkev on that and see if she has bothered to classify the waves of artificial creamers. I don't think that she has.
And I think, do you remember the International Delights
types of
instant coffees?
Yep.
Vienna. For some reason, the Vienna stands out in my head.
Mm-hmm. I don't remember what the other ones were, but yeah, you're right.
Well, cappuccino.
Yeah.
I think.
I'm sure that was a great cappuccino.
It's probably just top shelf. Cafe Vienna. Cafe.
I'm looking it up. Yeah. Oh, they've, well, is international, is it the same? Oh my gosh, is this the same creamer now? I don't remember. Because it used to come in like this tin, right?
Well, so the tin, those were the instant coffees, the international,
yeah,
flavors or whatever.
Yeah, and I thought it was called International Delights.
Delights is a coffee creamer, kind of a stand up, like a,
yes. I don't remember. Yeah, those tins that
orange cappuccino. Here, I've that seems. Orange cappuccino. Have you tried anything like that?
I have not. They were International Delight. Oh my gosh. It was General Food. Oh no, General Foods International Coffees.
And then there's the International Delights Creamers. Which,
yeah.
You know, I.
Let's see. I see the Cafe Vienna, Cafe Francais. Okay, I'm looking at it on eBay. I love eBay so much. So I'm looking at 11 tins, empty tins, in case you wanted to collect them. They show you the picture. You know, cause somebody didn't recycle. Somebody in Florida, by the way. So they didn't. So yeah, they show there's Orange Cappuccino, Cafe Vienna, Cafe Francais, and then more of the same, but in some with some silly paintings on them. So then
decorative,
I suppose, in a manner of speaking. So it says read full description because it just says lot of tins. So it says read full description. I clicked on read full description. Here's what I got. A blank page that all the way up in the right corner in Arial, it says lot of tins, all in very good condition. That is one of the loneliest internet pages I've ever looked at.
All in very good condition is more information.
It is. It is. But it's, I mean, like, in terms of the whole page is like 99% white space. And up in the corner.
You know, sometimes you don't need to oversell a product.
Sure don't.
When you've got international coffee tins available for sale.
And they think somebody's paying $50 for 11 empty tins of bad coffee.
I don't know what the recycle value is of those. But.
Good luck with that. Yes. So anyway.
So do you now cold brew or cold coffee?
Yes.
Iced coffee, whatever. Cold brew, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Do you favor those?
So actually, there are several different ways that that's.
Oh
being
my
done.
Gosh!
No, I don't know.
Which
no.
wave are we on that now?
Well, so. And some of the people that are like really, really serious about coffee think that cold brew is a complete waste of time because they point out that some of the most worthwhile flavors that come out of coffee bean are activated by the heat. So cold brewing it, you just get a very muted cup of coffee. Okay. So what some people do is they brew coffee hot and then they mm-hmm. pour it over ice. Mm-hmm. And then they're like, and now you got a watered down cup of coffee. So I guess that the new thing, and I don't know anything about it because I don't. I've tried some cold brew. I actually kind of like it sometimes, because some of the beans that I've done it with, you get almost a chocolatey kind of flavor. So it's like a nice cold chocolatey drink. That was nice. I enjoyed that. I guess the new thing is to like flash cool it. So you brew it and then they rapidly cool it so that you manage to get the flavors and then you get it cold and you don't water it down. I don't know how all that works.
You use your flash cooler.
You use your flash cooler, yeah. Or you flash your cooler.
Dear God.
I think we've all done that on a camping trip before, haven't we? Come on now. Let's be grown-ups here.
So do you ever experiment with putting different flavors in your coffee? I mean, not like International Delight, but like, or do you like a coffee that's like a hazelnut, you know? Or
I mean, I've had some of those before. I don't need it. I genuinely like for example, the probably my favorite coffee is when you have an Ethiopian natural processed coffee. And again, without getting super dorky about this, there was a way of processing the coffee bean that in particular was done in parts of Ethiopia more so than anywhere else in the world, where they, in most places, they would completely separate the cherry that the bean grew in from the bean, and then they would dry the beans. And then in Ethiopia, what they did is they opened it, but then they let it dry, still attached to the cherry in part. And I really think that in those kinds of coffees, there is a noticeable natural sweetness, and like a light fruit flavor to it.
Can you eat just the cherry?
That's a great question. I don't know what just the cherry tastes like. I haven't asked anybody. When things start to, you know, and here's the, actually, you know what? Well, let me think. There are enough people at Cat and Cloud that have made international trips for buying that I could probably in the next week, probably run across somebody who's done that. And I could ask them, did they ever try just like eating the cherry? And what does it taste like?
All right. Well, we'll pause and come back.
All right. Sounds good.
Oh, wait. That wasn't really that funny.
Ah.
So my understanding, I listened one evening, I was driving, to a program about coffee. And I don't remember if it was talking about... Well, I don't remember what I was talking about. But they indicated that there is... a lot of people feel that coffee came from Ethiopia.
Okay.
Initially. That Yemen makes a very strong claim for actually being the birthplace of coffee.
Oh, interesting.
But that almost no coffee is grown in Yemen now. I believe like for, commercial use.
Interesting. And I don't know why that is. Do you know? Did they say?
I don't. This individual went or to a number of different places, and he did find people still growing coffee in Yemen, like family kind of farms, and they grew it for themselves, or they grew small quantities. But I don't know if it has something to do with the politics in Yemen or the other socioeconomic factors or whatnot, but that interests me about coffee.
Yeah.
Where did it start? How did it move around? Why? Particularly then, if something starts someplace and isn't there any longer.
Right.
Because let's say even if coffee was first domesticated in Ethiopia, some of what I heard and then I've read seems to say that Yemen wouldn't have been far behind.
Sure. You know,
there's some similarity in terms of the time frames. So if coffee was being, you know, domesticated, you know, domesticated coffee was being grown in Yemen, you know, hundreds of years ago, why did that stop? Or how did Yemen just kind of miss the boat on coffee production? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I have no idea. That's interesting.
That'd be like if you couldn't get sausages in Germany.
Right.
No. But you can.
You can.
Sausages everywhere.
You can. On the street.
Everywhere. Yeah. Sausages and pretzels. You walk down the street, you're going to run to a cart selling one of them. You go into the train station, you're going to like pass like four different people selling you sausages. It's incredible. Anyway,
so you're saying there's a lot of sausage.
There's sausage everywhere, and they slather this like curry ketchup on it.
Nice.
And that's another thing that I find interesting, like how food moves around.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, the British cuisine has a lot of different influences, particularly Indian.
Yep.
It seems. But like, how did curry get to Germany? Because I don't know, like, the currywurst and then, like, curry. I don't think that curry is a part of German dishes otherwise. Right?
Not that I know of.
I mean, I don't have any recollection from having been in Germany and eating anything else that seemed, you know, to have curry. Or just, and I think we have I think we in the States have a pretty good understanding of German cuisine. Because that is one of the primary influences on what is now, air quotes, American
mm-hmm.
cuisine.
Yeah, anyway. I mean, I'm thinking it's just because the spice trade, like, went through all these regions. You know what I mean? That
yeah.
But I don't, yeah, other than that, I don't know.
But that its influence would be so minor.
Mm-hmm.
Like, basically one sausage and a variety of ketchup. Now I'm probably oversimplifying. We will probably now get all sorts of input from people.
Good. I
look
forward
to how I was wrong on this.
But if you think about it, I mean, like, it's only been as Indian culture has become more prominent in America that curry has become more of an influence on anything that is done here.
Right.
I mean, curry was like no part of the American palate at all. And even when I think of like German food, like when I think of German food that is served in America, I don't think of curry sausage or curry ketchup or any of that stuff. You know what I mean?
Right. The curry wurst is kind of like a fast food sort of thing. Mm-hmm. You would find that at any sausage stand in Germany.
Yeah.
And I guess I had one in Vienna, but that was, I almost said, but that's very similar, but you know, they don't need me doing another Anschluss.
Let's start an international incident, right? No, I don't know. I have no idea. I mean, some of the stuff that I've read suggests that Yemen was an early recipient of exports of coffee from Ethiopia. And then obviously there's some argument that maybe Yemen was where it actually started. You know, why it wouldn't be there anymore, I don't know. That's pretty weird.
The coffee fruit is called a coffee cherry.
Yes.
I think I'm seeing right now.
That is correct.
The indications are that it's quite edible.
Oh, cool.
It's kind of like a mildly sweet fruit. So that would make sense with what you're saying about, for instance, this different Ethiopian method of
mm-hmm.
drying the beans, right?
Yes.
And that they take on a little bit of that sweet.
Yeah.
That sounds interesting to me. So that's. I also like things produced in a different way than what would be the standard, but not necessarily, you know, not necessarily just for the sake of being different, but like a regional difference.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? That's interesting.
Yeah, but that and genuinely, like from different roasters, different, you know, growers and producers, Ethiopian coffees are consistently my favorite. I've come to really like a lot of coffee, but and that was actually the first one, when I started drinking coffee was the roaster in Geneva, Illinois, who introduced me to coffee, gave me some natural process Ethiopian, and I was like, it was noticeably different. It was lighter in terms of like not this sort of heavy burned kind of, you know, bitter. There was no bitterness to it. It was a little sweet, and nothing had been done to it. So, and then from there, I've grown to like and be able to identify flavor in other varieties of coffees. But yeah, those are still my favorites. All right.
Well, we've talked about coffee for quite a bit.
We have.
Quite a while.
Let's take an actual break.
Yeah, let's do it.
And we'll come right back, and we're going to talk about one other thing. And we are back. So we went longer on our coffee talk than we thought we would.
So, coffee talk.
Coffee talk. And so we have decided to really start to wrap things up, I think. Any big stuff you... Let me ask you this, Kevin. Any big stuff you got coming up this week? Anything you're looking forward to? Or is it just more of the same?
I think it's pretty much more of the same.
More of the same. All right.
Yeah. I'm just looking forward to whatever ripe opportunity nature throws my way.
That's fair enough.
Yeah.
I've been having baseball dreams.
That's not a joke. Have you watched any of the KBO?
I have not. I really should.
I want to warn you, though. If you watch some of it, you may see Tyler Saladino.
Okay, well, I consider myself warned. Forewarned is forearmed. Even though I only have two arms. So,
that's freakish.
That is. Speaking of freakish, we should start to let people know. So you don't have anything exciting coming up. I don't have anything exciting coming up. I bet they don't have anything exciting coming up. I hope they don't, because frankly, this is the problem. See, at this point, anything exciting would mean like something bad, right? Like nothing exciting, because nothing's happening. Okay. So, if you're still listening, good courage to you. You have mighty endurance, and we're proud of you. We love you for that. We want to remind you that you can find links to some of the stuff that we've talked about in this episode in our Facebook page, which is Sons of the Double Cheeseburger. That's at the Facebook. Or as they were calling themselves on The Last Dance. Did you notice this, Kevin? That The Last Dance was sponsored by the Facebook company.
Oh, my God.
They were trying to sound fancier. I'm like... Like, we would forget, who is the Facebook company? Oh, yeah, it's Facebook. That's who it is. Okay.
So, I hope they're different than that other Facebook.
So
that other Facebook is
not
really
those guys.
A country-destroying train wreck.
Not hopefully that mother
Facebook
scratcher.
Company will be different.
So, you can go help destroy democracy over at our page, over there. Or you could always send us mail. Kevin, would you like to tell people where tell people where they can send the mail to this week?
Yes. Well, we've had another change of address. I feel good about this one.
Yeah.
As I think you do as well. And I know why you wanted me to introduce it, because
well, I can say it. Okay. Yeah.
So it's right to us, please.
What's the post office box number?
The post office box number is 3.
All right. Great. And that's at Flomaton, Alabama. Flomaton, that's F-L-O for Florida. M-A for Alabama. T-O-N for town. That's how they named their town. It's Flomaton, Alabama. And, yeah, we're excited to be there. Three is a nice post office box number to get. It was cool. We got one before, but three, that's Babe Ruth's number. I mean, that's sweet.
Yeah, and I think Flomaton is a town that's kind of on the move.
Yeah.
It's right there across the border from Century, Florida, right?
Yeah. And Century, Florida was named Century because it was founded in 1901. So they were celebrating the beginning of the 20th century. But I'm telling you, Flomaton is all about the 21st century. And we want to give a special shout-out to Mayor Dewey J. Bondurant Jr. He gave us a lot of tax benefits to come and bring our P.O. box to Flomaton.
Yeah, we had a jelly cake, right?
We had a jelly cake, and I believe ham hocks, and like all the ham hocks that we could carry next time we're down there. Yeah, that's exciting. So, yeah, you can send that to, again, that's Post Office Box 3, Flomaton, Alabama. And the zip code there is 36441. All right. We might just open a home office down there. And if we do, we'll get you the information on that as well.
Yeah, I think things are looking up for us here.
It's looking good, yeah.
I know we've been moving around a lot, but I think we've perhaps found a home here.
Yeah.
Because there's really quite a bit going on here.
This is true. No. I'm excited about it. I mean, population has gone down 4 decades in a row, but I'm pretty sure it's ready to turn around. This 2020 census this year, this is going to be the one that changes everything.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we're going to see.
Because this 2020 census undoubtedly is going great anyway.
Yeah. And I want to direct you all to the Tri-City Ledger. There are some really fascinating stories that you could read.
Good stuff.
I don't think we want to focus on the top story being someone was arrested for having child pornography.
Let's not focus on that.
That could happen anywhere in a town of 1,400 people.
Could.
Right? You're bound to have a few bad eggs. But, but you can find lots of interesting articles on an abbreviated history of shaving razors.
That's good. I like that.
That's an article you can look forward to.
I'm glad it's abbreviated, because I would imagine it's long.
Oh, no. Here's Brandon. We weren't aware of this.
What?
There's an article, Remembering the Fall of the Confederacy.
Okay, well. We may not be sticking to Flomaton, because I got to tell you, I mean, should we tell them about the other situation?
Yes.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
We were going to go to, and I've even blocked their name out of my mind. Where are we going to go to the other time?
Choco Loco?
No, Alabama? No, not that one. The one with the racists.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that was Arab. Or,
Arab,
or do they
yes.
call it Arab?
We were going to go to Arab, Alabama. And then we found out that they had a horrific racial history, like really horrific. And so we were like, we're out of there. So if Flomaton is
like bad for Alabama.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's bad period, but like by Alabama standards, it was gross and evil. And so, so we decided we could not park our P.O. box there. And if Flomaton is turning out to be yet another hive of villainy and scum and racism, then we'll be moving on from there.
We may not find a comfortable home in Alabama.
So Dewey J. Bondurant Jr., that's a word to you.
I was going to say something, and now I really feel like we had decided not to say this, but I'm going to say it anyway.
You know what? It's out now.
So we've been asking, you know, for certain tax breaks or whatnot. We were our overtures were rebuffed by the town of Ballplay, Alabama.
Yeah.
Which yeah, we, it's a shame to me.
A lot of towns, and Ballplay just said, no, we're not going to play ball.
Which is a shame to me because it was named after a spot where Native American tribes would play stickball in order to resolve disputes between those tribes.
Hence the name Ballplay.
I liked that tie to baseball or, you know, ball games.
Mm-hmm. But, and Native Americans. Absolutely. But yeah, when they wouldn't play ball with us, we couldn't go to ball play.
Also, they have not had a post office since 1905.
That is also a
problem. So I think that probably is a deal breaker as well.
So honestly, I think that their refusal to give in to our demands was really just like they were trying to front for the fact that they didn't have a post office. They didn't want us to realize that and be ashamed. So I guess, I mean, I'm going to say this. Ball play, don't be ashamed. Be who you are. Be the best ball play you can be. Because you got all these other crazy, racist, lunatic towns all around you. Just be you and be great. When you've got a dispute, solve it just the way it's been solved on that spot for hundreds of years. Play some stickball. And then walk away from it, better people.
I absolutely could not have said that better than you did. I couldn't have said anything at all. So that was beautifully said.
So, well, I hope that you're continuing to stay safe. If you're out getting a haircut now because shelter-in-place restrictions have been relaxed, just remember, don't lick the person next to you. Because that's never polite. But it's really going to make people uncomfortable right now.
Well, and in particular, they would probably have hair all over them if they're getting a haircut.
That's a good point. I didn't even think about that part of it, but yeah, you're right. It's all the more reason. All right. Well, until next time, Kevin, peace out.
And also to you, peace, my friend. I don't know what's wrong with me.
No, I think that was smooth. I think we landed that plane perfectly.
Wheels up. Oh, boy.
What do you mean the landing gear's broke?
What's it on the top of the plane? This isn't right.
Oh, thank you.